We're going to
recite together
the verse that you see projected here. It's the third of the invocation verses to the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. You can chant together, please. Nigama kalpataror galitam padam shukha mukhad amritam dravyam samyutam pibata bhagavatam rasam alayam mohor aho rasika bhuvi bhavoka. Translation. O expert and thoughtful men, relish Srimad Bhagavatam, the mature fruit of the desire tree of the Vedic literatures. It emanated from the lips of Sri Shukadeva Goswami. Therefore, this fruit has become even more tasteful, although its nectarian juice was already relishable for all, including liberated souls. I'm going to read a portion of the purport written by Srila Prabhupada. In this shloka, it is definitely stated that spiritual rasa, which is relished even in the liberated stage, can be experienced in the literature of Srimad Bhagavatam due to its being the ripened fruit of all Vedic knowledge. By submissively hearing this transcendental literature, one can attain the full pleasure of his heart's desire. But, there's always a but, one must be very careful to hear the message from the right source. Srimad Bhagavatam is exactly received from the right source. It was brought by Narada Muni from the spiritual world and given to his disciple Sri Vyasadeva. The latter, in turn, delivered the message to his son, Srila Shukadeva Goswami. And Srila Shukadeva Goswami delivered the message to Maharaj Parikshit just 7 days before the king's death. Srila Shukadeva Goswami was a liberated soul from his very birth. He was liberated even in the womb of his mother. And he did not undergo any sort of spiritual training after his birth. At birth, no one is qualified, neither in the mundane nor in the spiritual sense. But Sri Shukadeva Goswami, due to his being a perfectly liberated soul, did not have to undergo an evolutionary process for spiritual realization. Yet, despite his being a completely liberated person situated in the transcendental position above the three modes, he was attracted to this transcendental rasa of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is adored by liberated souls who sing Vedic hymns. The Supreme Lord's pastimes are more attractive to liberated souls than to mundane people. He is of necessity not impersonal, because it is only possible to carry on transcendental rasa with a person. And just a little bit more. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the transcendental pastimes of the Lord are narrated, and the narration is systematically depicted by Srila Shukadeva Goswami. Thus, the subject matter is appealing to all classes of persons, including those who seek liberation and those who seek to become one with the Supreme Whole. In Sanskrit, a parrot is also known as shuka. When a ripened fruit is cut by the red beaks of such birds, its sweet flavor is enhanced. The Vedic fruit, which is mature and ripe in knowledge, is spoken through the lips of Srila Shukadev Goswami, who is compared to the parrot, not for his ability to recite the Bhagavatam exactly as he heard it from his learned father, but for his ability to present the work in a manner that would appeal to all classes of men. So it's a long purport. This is just all that I'm going to read for now. The value of hearing the Bhaktivedanta purports makes all the difference in the world. At one point in time, Prabhupada wanted the devotees, his disciples, to maintain our own printing press. And I believe in Mayapur, the BBT in Mayapur, they have state-of-the-art printing presses made in Germany, and they run those presses. In part because that's the same system that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used. That is, to maximize the limited resource that they had, his own devotees were doing the printing. It was saving some expense. In fact, it said during Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's time, from Navadvip, every day, they would send by boatloads of paper, 7 to 10 bullock carts full of paper would go to the Chaitanya Gaudiya Math, and they would return loaded with books that were now printed. And each day, 7 to 10 bullock cart loads of paper would come and go. Daily. So the presses were very active. So at one point in time, similarly, Prabhupada wanted a printing press. It didn't last too long because the devotees didn't know how to run a printing press. They thought they did, and they made a big mess. It was costing more than having professional people print it, so. But when they were running the printing press, the person in charge of the press, I remember this very specifically, his name is Advaita, he asked Srila Prabhupada if it would be all right to print a pocket Bhagavad Gita, I mean literally one that one can put in one's pocket, and I can remember him motioning to Prabhupada like that, and then pull it out and just from time to time open the book and read the verse and memorize the verse and put it back in your pocket for verse memorization. And Prabhupada's answer was no. And his explanation was that without the purports, we won't understand the message of Bhagavad Gita. And then he went on to say that the different translations of Bhagavad Gita are not so different in terms of the verses, but they're very, very different in terms of the commentary. What does the verse mean? Because it was fashionable at the time, and it's somehow still fashionable, to say this means that. Like, Krishna says, surrender unto me. Commentator says, don't surrender to Krishna. One time when Prabhupada came to America, he had boys, sit still, okay? Thanks. Prabhupada had Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 1 in three parts. And he had a manuscript for Bhagavad Gita, which he had planned to print in America. in the course of living in the Lower East Side, the manuscript was stolen, along with his manual typewriter. And what was somebody going to do with a stolen Bhagavad Gita manuscript? Nothing. Prabhupada certainly had plans for it, but it was stolen, so he had to write another translation and commentary on Bhagavad Gita. So while he didn't have a Bhagavad Gita, he requested the devotees to go to a bookstore and buy one that was available, so he could use that for presenting Bhagavad Gita. So they bought one, and it was a Mayavadi version. I won't tell you which one. So one class, a very memorable experience for me, Prabhupada was reading from the verse and then the purport. So, you know, it was 2 days in a row. One was Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakto, and then another one was Sarvadharmam Parityaja Mamekam Sharanam Braja. And both of them, here's how Prabhupada did it. Krishna says, surrender unto me. The commentator says, don't surrender unto Krishna. Surrender to the unborn, unmanifest within Krishna. And Prabhupada made a fist and loudly planted his fist on the desk. Just see what he's doing. Then he read it again. Krishna says, surrender unto me. Commentator, don't surrender unto Krishna. Something else. Then, again, just see what he is doing. Krishna says, surrender unto me. Commentator, don't surrender unto Krishna. Prabhupada said, if he wants to make his own philosophy, make his own philosophy. Be honest. This is my philosophy. But don't say, this is Krishna's philosophy, and then you trash Krishna and Krishna's philosophy and say something else. Write your own philosophy book, but don't call it Bhagavad Gita. Krishna knows what he intends to say, and he says it. It's not that he's incompetent and an incompoop, and he doesn't know how to say what he means. He knows what he wants to say, and he says it. Surrender unto me. And Prabhupada would say, aham. That's first person singular. Surrender unto me. And same. Manmana, think of me. Commentary, don't think of Krishna. Think of the unborn, unmanifest within Krishna. It's cheating. I mean, there's many not nice things. It's disgusting. It's rascaldom. It's not nice. It's dishonest. So, how did I get up on that topic? printing press. What are the printing? Huh? Pocket Bhagavad Gita, printing press. Oh, how nice the Prabhupada's purports are. That's how. Because without the purport, how are we going to understand the message? Thank you. Without the purport. And with the purport, it's so relishable. It's the function of those who are acharyas writing commentary on sacred literature that they disclose the meanings of the literature, and to do that one must be very qualified. Tomorrow during the second morning class we're going to be discussing the verses that follow this one. 113. So verses 4 through 8. It's the next section of verses that come before the questions asked by the sages of Naimisharanya. But in that section, it's describing the qualifications of the speaker. Suta Goswami is introduced in the literature, and the sages are appreciating his qualification to speak. And they're exhibiting their qualification to receive from that speaker. Because in order to have the transmission of transcendental knowledge, you need both. Qualified speaker, qualified receiver. Just like your cell phone. You have to have a transmitter and you have to have a receiver. Otherwise, you know, one without the other, it's not going to work. Transcendental knowledge requires a proper transmitter. So Shukadeva Goswami, this verse is saying, he spoke Srimad Bhagavatam. But when he spoke Srimad Bhagavatam, he didn't just pull it out of the air. He heard it from his father, Vyasadeva. And Vyasadeva received it, heard it from Narada Muni. Here it says Narada Muni brought it from the spiritual world, but Narada Muni received from Lord Brahma. And our earlier verse of this invocation, series of verses, Tene Brahma Hridaya Adikavaye. Lord Brahma received it directly from within his heart, by given to him by the personality of Godhead. It was spoken within the heart of Lord Brahma. So in this way, the method of disciplic succession carries the message forward. And similarly, one who's going to write commentary, as Prabhupada wrote commentary, he made his commentary from the previous acharya's commentary. He traveled, little story also, not books like this size, you know, books like as big as this desk size, one of those old style books, like that thick, and to open it, it's like, and it took a whole suitcase just to carry the commentaries of the acharyas. So it's like several different acharyas, four or five different acharyas were in his suitcase, or the commentary was in his suitcase. And he would run his pages along, because I watched him doing it in the middle of the night, guarding his quarters, just running his finger across the page with his, you know, spectacles down, and in the middle of the night, while everyone else is zonked out, he's doing his Bhaktivedanta purports, reading the commentary, and then presenting for the audience that he knew he was to address, because their audience was a different audience. The audience of largely the trained and sophisticated and purified and elevated and educated personalities within India. Largely the Brahminical community, persons who were interested in such subject matters and were responsible to perpetuate it, to carry it forward over next generations. Prabhupada had a different audience, the world, the uncultured, uneducated Westerners, spiritually uneducated, materially contaminated. So it was a tough audience. So he had to present according to the audience. But strictly in the line of the previous acharyas and taking directly the message from Shukadeva Goswami in disciplic succession. And where did our acharyas get it? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke about the commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam as primarily coming from Sridhar Swami, very, very prior to his time, a great devotee of the Lord, a great learned personality who was gifted. The history of how he received Srimad Bhagavatam and its understanding, I don't know. But Lord Chaitanya accepted him as the foremost acharya in the commenting on Srimad Bhagavatam, and anyone subsequent to him must be, oh, here he is, the talkative one. See you later. One of the many talkative ones. Maybe in a few years. Okay, so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described that anyone who's writing, wishes to write commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, must be faithful to the commentary of Sridhar Swami. To prepare for this visit to Seattle and discussing these topics, I had the good fortune of receiving translations of some of the commentaries, just to try to absorb and assimilate their way of expressing the messages of these invocation verses. And they all speak of Sridhar Swami, because they're chaste and faithful and having fidelity to his presentation, his teachings. And that's the way of disciplic succession. So one of the topics of this, that's in this verse, is the presentation of rasa, which is a very elevated, a very confidential subject. It's something that in a immature stage one shouldn't play with, like you don't play with fire. Not good for children to play with fire, because it can burn. And it can do some very beneficial things, but it can also burn. So one should be very, very careful. Similarly, with the spiritual topic of rasa, it's mentioned in this verse, it's the essence. Because from the previous discussion, there is unqualified people, unregulated people, you know, everyday people, practically like aborigines or two-legged animals, persons who are unregulated by any spiritual standard. Maybe, to some degree, there's some idea of right and wrong and morality and things like that, but not per se guided by higher spiritual authority. Then there are those that are guided by higher spiritual authority. And commonly, as stated by Krishna and within our experience, the idea behind that is gaining piety so that I can gain the fruits of piety so that I can enjoy. I can enjoy nicely. And then after this life, enter into a even more enjoyable situation within the heavenly realm. And it's not just one part of the world or one religion or one culture that has that idea. The world has that idea of religious, the merit of religious teaching. And then there's another layer or level that has to do with the eternal soul's situation with the Supreme. And the eternal soul situation with the Supreme is to be situated in a state of oneness, harmony with the Supreme. Everyone knows the phrase, become one with the Supreme, or become one with God, to become one. It's like it's out there in the spiritual marketplace. Everyone knows the phrase. The message of the Srimad Bhagavatam, however, is a message of rasa. Because, we'll say it this way, in that state of oneness with the Supreme, What do you do? What's the activity of a liberated soul? What do liberated souls do? When you ask the question, you don't get a clear answer. That's my experience. If people don't have the training in rasa. Similarly, ask people, what do you do in heaven? I remember as a boy, you know, like young like these four gentlemen up here, asking my parents and asking my Sunday school teacher, what's it like there? When people go to heaven, what do they do? Like, you know, please give me a travel brochure so I can know, I can be excited to get my ticket and go to that place. You know, what's it like? Before I even get there and get on board and get my ticket and, you know, pay the plane fare, what's the place like? And I never got an answer. I got a pat on the head saying, oh, that's cute. Isn't that nice? He's asking this question. And that just, as we say these days, that fried me out. I felt like, you know, cut it out. what's the answer? What is that stage in the heavenly realm is described in the Bhagavatam, the liberated realm is described in the Bhagavatam, the transcendental activity of the liberated soul is described in the Bhagavatam, and that's called rasa. And in fact, in the Taittiriya Upanishad, it says the same thing. Here's what the Taittiriya Upanishad says. It starts with raso vai saha. I guess that's really the saha. That's a pronoun indicating the absolute truth or Brahman. Vai is certainly rasa. The absolute is rasa. So rasa means there's two. It's an exchange. It's a relationship between an individual and another individual, and there's a mellow of exchange. Only this verse is saying the absolute is rasa, and then rasam hi evayam labha nandi bhavati. After realizing that our position in relation to saha, the basis and support of all rasa, we experience rasa. We experience happiness. I'll do it again in a different way. Commonly, at least from my limited experience, we speak of rasa as something that we have a relationship with the Supreme. Shanta rasa, Dasya rasa, first is Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, Madhurya. So, that's what we experience in relation to the Supreme Lord. We experience one of those five rasas. Constitutionally, each of us has one of those five rasas, and then there's all varieties, subcategories of those five rasas. But the real meaning is, the absolute is the reservoir of all rasa. And when we are in connection with or in relation with through devotion, through connection, through bhakti yoga with the Supreme, we experience the Supreme. And because there is some particularity of each of us, we experience that, our relationship with Him. And that, so, but He's everything. He's the big ocean of rasa. And then there's a little living entity connecting with that big ocean of rasa, and we experience whatever our particular rasa is. It's like, you know, there's an electric outlet. There's a bunch of things plugged into the outlet. And the outlet goes to, you know, some cable, and the cable goes to the power generating plant. There's the power generating plant, and we're connecting with the power generating plant remotely. So one device is making the microphone work, another device, you know, so making the camera work, and then making the computer work, and different things. But it's the power plant that's generating the energy to do all of these things. So similarly, the absolute truth is rasa. The first verse is all about the absolute truth. The absolute truth is rasa, and we have an opportunity to connect with that absolute truth with some rasa, with some taste. And that's a relationship. It's as Prabhupada is writing in the purport, it's personal. It's the most personal thing that you can get because it's of the soul. Something that's personal on the platform of the body, it's here for a moment and then it's gone. So that's personal to a degree. But to the ultimate degree is the soul's connection with the Supreme. And something that isn't created or destroyed. It may become dormant and forgotten for some time for those of us who are conditioned souls. But for those that are perfected souls, they're forever enjoying rasa with the Supreme. And the Srimad Bhagavatam, spoken in the previous verses, that it's non-different. It's the literary incarnation of the personality of Godhead. We're directly associating with Krishna through the Srimad Bhagavatam, especially when heard through the lips of Shukadev Goswami, Shuka Mukad. We're experiencing Krishna in the most ecstatic way. And Prabhupada is describing here that the term Shuka refers to Shukadev Goswami. It's also indicating the way in which Shukadev Goswami presented it, not in a rote, parrot-like way, but in a making it sweeter kind of a way. By his, as a parrot with his beak first softens the fruit before poking his beak into the fruit and then drinking the juice from the fruit. Similarly, Shukadev Goswami, by speaking that which was already relishable, this galitam palam, this ripened fruit of the Vedic tree of wisdom, the fruit was already, out of all of the knowledge of the Vedas, this Bhagavatam is a gathering of the essence and the ripened stage, the matured stage of Vedic wisdom. It's the stage of knowledge of one's relationship with the Supreme. And that mellow, that taste is accessible for those who hear it in the proper manner. Hear it very attentively from the proper source in this method of disciplic succession from those who have, just like Sutta Goswami is going to be described as having heard it directly from Shukadev Goswami. The first version Vyasadev compiled and taught to Shukadev. Second, Shukadev spoke it. Third, Sutta heard from Shukadev and he spoke it. So we're hearing that recording of Vyasadeva describing Sutta speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam again. But just taking that same nectar that he heard from Shukadeva and presenting it again. But having assimilated the knowledge. Having full, not just, you know, passing on the information. Because a lot of one of my pet peeves is modern education. It's just information. It's not what real education means changing one's heart transformation, not just information. This is the age of information technology. It's not the age of transforming hearts. Information doesn't change hearts. Information gives you a resource to do things, but it doesn't change hearts. And it's actually very dangerous. You have lots of information at your disposal, and you have a dirty heart. It's dangerous. Very dangerous. And when things are potentially dangerous, dangerous things happen. People take technology and use it in hurtful ways. And it's not just, you know, somebody does some crime kind of hurtful ways. The whole society becomes contaminated and polluted, and the real purpose of life becomes covered and lost and forgotten, and it's awful. A whole civilization is created that's chasing dark things and calling it happiness. I mean, one of the things that I really don't like about traveling internationally is now they've got technology set up so that everybody's got a little monitor, a movie thing. And that people are addicted to it. As soon as they sit down, they got the little doodad and they're, you know, seeing which movie they're going to watch. And it's so distracting. My only recourse is, well, two things. Sleep, and generally I can't sleep in planes. So just take a project and I want to get absorbed in, just get so absorbed in it. I just don't even, tuned out to all that other stuff. But it's so addictive. It's not just a time waster, it's a brain polluter. And how does that come about? It didn't happen overnight. It's just the gradual degeneration, deterioration of culture. So where do you get real culture from? You get culture from a transcendental source. Real culture is on the platform of the soul, and that which awakens the consciousness of the soul and the happiness of the soul and the soul's connection with the Supreme Soul. That's what's valuable. Prabhupada described, even up to the time that he was a young boy, whenever there were functions, public functions, always there was some recitation of Mahabharata or Ramayana. Always. And I was, when I heard Prabhupada describing that, I was thinking about in New York, they have all these street fairs, Saint something or other fair, like St. Patrick's Day. And what does St. Patrick's Day become? It's just a brawl. People get wildly drunk, and there's street fights, and it's terrible. And, you know, that wonderful culture of America all over the place, St. Jerome and whatever are all the other ones, it's happening in India too, you know. Anyway, I won't go into it. Culture is just going down the tubes. And for want of hearing the proper thing from proper source, to restore culture isn't so difficult if you take the right means. But if you don't take the right means, tomorrow I'm going to end the discussion by taking a little presentation from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is writing a commentary on Chaitanya Bhagavat, a portion in the beginning of Chaitanya Bhagavat, where Vrindavan Das Thakur is describing the situation in Navadvip. A seat of high learning. Many, 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 many brahmanas lived there. And they were devoid of devotion to the personality of Godhead. So whenever they were using their brahminical strength, God was absent. And their interest was increasing their material prosperity and enjoying and merrymaking, basically, in the mode of goodness. So, but when the supreme pure becomes obscured, even in religious activity, then everything starts to go down and down and down. And it's Kali Yuga. It's like a vortex, down and down. At the edge of a whirlpool, things move more slowly. But as they are drawn towards the middle of the vortex, they go more quickly, down and down and down and down, and disappear. So we're in the age of Kali, where, according to the sages of Naimisharanya 5,000 years ago, real merit was practically gone. And that was at the beginning. And now it's going, going, going. Some shred is left. Some vestiges are remaining. But how to restore them? The roots need to be nourished. The roots of our spiritual hankering of the soul. And this Srimad Bhagavatam provides that. It provides that for the most qualified, to just end with this, for the most qualified persons, the already liberated persons. It's mentioned in this purport that Shukadeva Goswami, from the time he was born and even before he was born, within the womb of his mother, he was a liberated soul. That's not ordinary. But that was Shukadeva Goswami. And he, already liberated soul, became attracted to the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. When the sages of Naimisharanya hear this from Sutta, they say, wait. He's a liberated soul. And a liberated soul doesn't need to learn anything. Those of us that are not liberated, we need to do things to become liberated. But he's already liberated. So why did Shukadeva Goswami study or hear from his father the message of Srimad Bhagavatam? He's already liberated. And the reply by Sutta was that therefore this literature, Srimad Bhagavatam, is on the liberated platform. The verse that he speaks is the famous Atmarama verse. Even those that are perfectly realized, satisfied within, Atmarama means, they're satisfied within the soul themselves. They're attracted to this wonderful description of Srimad Bhagavatam, meaning it's all spiritual. Logic is there, right? Someone already liberated becoming attracted to Srimad Bhagavatam, why? It's all spiritual. Because they're not interested in something material. They are interested in that which is all spiritual. And the all spiritual activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead indicate rasa. Spiritual. Rasa. That's what liberated souls do. They engage in exchange of love with Rasa Vai Saha, the Absolute Truth, who is the reservoir of all rasa. And their attraction is not their happiness. Their attraction is the happiness of the Beloved, Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's divine love. They're attracted. That's what liberated souls do. And similarly, liberated souls assist other liberated souls in tasting the rasa, and they assist those who are not yet in that position to create a society, a civilization, where people are engaged in God-centered activity. They try like that. They sacrifice. They make such efforts. Not just for their own happiness, but for the well-being of society in general. And that's exactly what this literature, Srimad Bhagavatam, is, and the invocation verses are speaking in that way. It's relishable by the liberated souls. It's relishable by those who are trying to become liberated souls. It's relishable even for the persons who are contaminated by sinful activity and the reactions of those sinful activities. Agham gunvanti, agham dunvanti karchneya. It frees one from the reactions of one's sins because it's contact with something that's very pure, supremely pure. Such a nice literature. I like Srimad Bhagavatam. I like speaking about Srimad Bhagavatam. I like speaking from Srimad Bhagavatam. Anything related to Srimad Bhagavatam I like. It's my favorite. So, any comments or questions? Yes? I don't know much, other than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke of him as an acharya. Sridhar Swami is an acharya who, before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's life, I don't know when he lived, I don't know where he lived, I don't know about his background. But that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted him as the foremost commentator on Srimad Bhagavatam. Don't know his history much. Anyone else? Yes.
Maharaj.
Pretty powerful microphone you got there.
You mentioned about Srila Prabhupada saying, reading only the slokas in the Bhagavad Gita and no the commentaries.
Yes.
So, what is your recommendation like reading the narrations of Kamala Bhakta of the books without commentaries?
No harm, but as he says in his narrations, that in the beginning he has a little like prologue, and he says the purpose of this is to inspire the listener to read the Bhaktivedanta purports so they can understand more fully the meaning. He says it explicitly. It's beyond the scope of this literature to narrate all the commentary. The scope of this is to present the message itself, to inspire the reader to go more deeply. So, just like sloka memorization, aside from Amala Bhakta's narrations, or anyone else, Dravida does, or others, you know, have that talent, that gift. Just memorizing slokas. You like in our Sunday school. Do you memorize slokas in Sunday school?
Yeah.
Do you know any? Recite one sloka. And the next question is, what does it mean? I don't know. Anyway, so knowing the meaning is really what's important. That was something that Prabhupada said. Between the different translations, the major difference is not how the verses are translated. The major difference is what's the meaning. And so, the purport is essential. So if the children, if the children learn Bhagavad Gita verses, that's very nice, and they should be encouraged to understand the meaning, not just even the translation, but what's the significance of it? Like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when he was 7 years old. Any one of you guys are 7 years old? You're seven? You're seven. When, listen to this, you 2 7-year-olds. When Bhaktisiddhanta was seven, he had memorized the entire Bhagavad Gita. But not only that, you could ask him to give the meaning of any one of the 700 verses of Bhagavad Gita. He could give a 10-minute talk on the meaning of every single verse of Bhagavad Gita. That's Bhakti Siddhanta. So one should access the purport. Then we'll have a sense of, oh, that's what it means. Anything else? Yeah, I see. Watch out, it's a powerful microphone.
Thank you, Srila Maharaj. Thank you for the class. And Maharaj, I had a question. You had said that we have the opportunity to connect with the Lord in one out of five rasas. We have the opportunity to connect with the Lord in one out of five rasas.
Ah, that's what you said. Okay.
Could you elaborate more, please?
Can I elaborate? We're going to do that tomorrow morning. You're going to be here tomorrow morning? I'll elaborate tomorrow morning. But the basic idea is, boys, the basic idea is that the spiritual world exists for the happiness of the personality of Godhead. We are part of that. We exist for His happiness. And He's really expert at being happy. Yes, He is. He's expert at being happy. And there are varieties within, Prabhupada has taught over and over, variety is the mother of enjoyment. You've heard that one before? Variety. Supposing, you know, every day you just made one preparation. And, you know, you ask your husband, how do you like it? He might say, well, I like it, but can we have a little variety, please? You get the idea. So, variety is the mother of enjoyment, and within the spiritual world, there's unlimited variety, but for the sake of analysis, there are five categories, and then subcategories, unlimited subcategories of those categories, of relationships, or rasa. That Krishna's enjoying in a relationship with His loving devotees. So neutrality, friendship, servitorship, parental, conjugal love. Varieties, and, you know, mixtures of them, even. The purpose of all of that is Krishna's enjoyment, and consequently, we also enjoy in an exchange of love with Him in a particular rasa. All right. More tomorrow. Yes.
There's a question online. The question is from Nita Mataji. At what stage can rasa be felt in a devotee? Is it only in advanced stage?
Yes.
Until then, is the relationship of servant to be maintained?
I got the... What was the last part, please? Just the last part.
Until then, is the relationship of servant to be maintained?
Well, our idea of being a... All... How to say this succinctly... All rasas have a foundation, except for Shanta rasa. All rasas have, as a foundation, a mood of being in service. So, our position is not, We're not qualified yet. We don't have the adhikar to discern what is our constitutional, unique rasa with Krishna. But there's certainly, we all have the experience, that there's happiness in service to others. And there's happiness in service to Krishna. Now, that may be, to a large part, a mode of goodness happiness, in service unto others. It's just common experience. You do something. You go out of your way to do something because you know someone else needs something, and you do something to help someone that needs something. You feel something. You feel a happiness. That's a mode of goodness happiness. It's a reflection of rasa. It's not rasa. It's a material rasa, let's say it that way. Then there's the rasa of the soul. And for us to have an inkling of the rasa of the soul, we need a lot of purification first. Like a lot of mode of goodness first, and then a lot more of the shuddha stage of the mode of goodness. Then it comes naturally. It's not like pulling on your chin saying, I wonder what my rasa is. Maybe it's that one, maybe it's this one. It's not a speculative thing. It becomes, you experience it. It's within your, it's disclosed to you by Krishna. Naturally so. It's described in Nectar Devotion, but at our stage it's premature to think, what is my rasa? That address the question? Hopefully, okay.
There's one more question online, Maharaj, from Shiva Kumar Prabhu. The question is...
Hold it away from your mouth a little bit, because the experts are too much.
The question is, when referring to modern education...
Yeah.
You said that information doesn't change hearts.
Yes.
But when one presents information about soul, God, etc., from Vedic scriptures, what is the main factor which changes heart of listeners?
Well, let's say it again. It's more than simply the transmission of information. Transcendental knowledge is more than just information. Transcendental knowledge is a connection with reality with a capital R. Transcendental knowledge is detachment from the material conception and entering into the spiritual conception of reality. That can serve, as it says in Nectar Devotion, it can serve as an impetus or getting a foothold in the realm of devotional service. Getting a foothold. Does that phrase mean something to you? Like say you're trying to scale a wall. And, it's a steep wall or an incline. So you make something where you can get a foothold and you can take the next step. And then a foothold, you can take the next step. So Prabhupada writes in Nectar Devotion that knowledge may be helpful to get a foothold in entering into the realm of devotion. But the essence of devotion is not that knowledge. It's not a concept. It's a mood of submission unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead with a proper understanding of who is the Personality of Godhead. It's more than just information. How many times have we've all had this experience, I'm sure. You read a verse and you don't understand it. And you read a verse, and you don't understand it. And you read the same verse again, you don't understand it. One man was sharing this with me that he has been reading the same verse for 6 months, and he doesn't understand it. Well, part of proper understanding is receiving from the proper source, and receiving from the proper source in the proper way, and that is understandable. But so it's not just the information, it's the relationship with and submission unto a proper source. Then there's transmission of transcendental knowledge that carries one into the realm of bhakti. I hope that helps. Anything else? Okay. Last question.
Maharaj, here it says that the fruit has become even more tasteful because it has been tested by Sukadeva Goswami.
It's his remnants.
So, is Sukadeva Goswami like somehow more elevated than, like, is he more qualified in some way, or
how more qualified than
Vyasadeva, or like
as you this morning you were here, you were not here, were you online? No. We had a discussion about this morning. Vyasadeva was in the audience along with Maharaj Parikshit and his spiritual master Narada Muni when Shukadeva was speaking. Now, is the disciple greater than the spiritual master? No, that would be a not very nice idea. But Shukadeva Goswami had a particular qualification. Such a special qualification that even Vyas wanted to hear. It wasn't that he wanted to hear information because he already knew the information. He wanted the rasa, which was what Shukadeva was giving. He had the capacity to give that rasa, the mellow taste of the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, the ripened fruit. Nigama kalpataror galitam palam. His special qualification, which inspired Shukadeva, which inspired Vyasadeva to hear from his son and disciple, was his ability to draw the nectar, the rasa, of the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, the ripened fruit of the tree of the desire tree of Vedic knowledge. But we discussed it at length this morning, so listen to the recording. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.